Today I'm going to talk about Basho Zen. This was going to be two talks, but I'm not giving another talk for a month. It was going to be two talks. We were going to have a retreat today and yesterday. So I've consolidated it, and we'll see what happens. Basho lived in the 17th century. He was a Zen practitioner, started when he was young. Also started writing poetry when he was young. He's considered the founder of haiku, although he didn't know that word. You know, founders don't know that word. He was just doing poetry and doing zazen. That's mostly what he did. What I'm going to talk about today, the framework I'm going to talk about today comes partly from work that Jane Hirschfield has done. Wonderful American poet and also a Zen Buddhist practitioner. And I've altered her framework some, quite a bit. So I'm going to talk about six gates into Zen from Basho's poetry. Six different gates. First is longing. Second is uncertainty. The third is simplicity. The fourth is saying yes. The fifth is intimacy. And the sixth is cracking open. You can see why this is two or three talks, but we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. Longing. So in the narrow road within, Basho speaks of meditators, pilgrims, and poets who died on the road. And in those days in Japan, most of the poets were also meditators, practicing meditation, living close to nature. Basho, as a young man, began his poetry. He spent time in a Zen monastery in his early 30s. He never got ordained. And he became a traveling person who looked like a monk, but was actually not a monk. One of his early poems is, "I am resolved to bleach on the moors, my body pierced by the wind." So that was his longing. That was his longing to open up and join all life, even if it was painful. "I am resolved to bleach on the moors, my body pierced by the wind." The greatest enlightened person of the last 150 years in India, I think, was Ramakrishna. And Ramakrishna says, "Who weeps for God? People shed a whole jug of tears for wife and children. They swim in tears for money. But who weeps for God?" Or I would say, who weeps to crack open beyond the small, tight self to something huge and wonderful, which we call the Buddha nature? Ramakrishna continues, "Cry with a real cry. Longing is like the rosy dawn. After the dawn comes out the sun." So he has many poems on longing, but I'm only quoting that one. About longing and this longing that he and his students both had, first he and then later his students, he quotes Kukai, "Don't follow the ancient masters, seek what they sought." So we have to do this ourselves. We get help from each other, but we have to do this ourselves. And if the aspiration is inside, we will do the practice and we will open up beyond our little self. When we yearn for something, it makes us one-pointed. When I yearn for coffee, I'm one-pointed. When I yearn for chocolate, I'm one-pointed. I don't do coffee until I get my chocolate. If we yearn for the opening up beyond our little mixed up mind, we will be able to open up. So that's the first gate. If we didn't have longing, we wouldn't be here. You guys wouldn't be here watching me talk if you didn't have longing right now. Sensei wouldn't exist. It's only because of longing. We didn't inherit. We're not Buddhists because our parents told us to do it. We did it because we longed some deep quietness inside. So the second gate is uncertainty. Second gate is uncertainty. How can we satisfy this longing when everything is so uncertain? Everything is so uncertain. This is the most uncertain time in my whole life. Well, I was born after World War II. My parents used to talk about World War II. That was a very uncertain time. But in my life, this is the most uncertain time. Right now, you guys are feeling it. We're all feeling it. So here's the writer Stanley Kunitz having a little piece he calls Against Certainty. Before his death at 78, he wrote this. There is something out in the dark that wants to correct us. Each time I think this, it answers that. Answers hard in the heart grammar strictness. If I then say that, it too is taken away. Between certainty and the real and ancient and enmity. When the cat waits in the path hedge, no cell of her body is not waiting. This is how she is able to completely disappear. I would like to enter the silent portion as she does, to live among the great vanishing as a cat must live, one shadow fully at ease inside another. Uncertainty, uncertainty. So Basho lived in the late 18th. He was an adult in the late 1600s. Late 1600s. Famine and late 1600s, flood, social turmoil, and desperate poverty. Just as my teachers, my two Japanese teachers, did their most serious practice, especially Katagiri Roshi, during and after World War II, when they didn't have enough food. So Basho writes about seeing a two-year-old child abandoned by the side of the road when he is on his journeys, abandoned by the side of the road. As I guess you saw in the 1600s in Japan. And he tossed it food. He didn't have much, but he tossed it food. And then he went on and he was mad at himself that he had only tossed it food. He was mad at society. And here he wrote, "The cries of monkey are hard for a person to bear. What of this child given to autumn winds? The cries of monkeys are hard for a person to bear. What of this child given to autumn winds?" So there's not only confusion when everything is uncertain, but there's sadness. When will things get better? Maybe 60 days, maybe 90 days, maybe 6 months. We don't know. It's uncertain. It's uncertain. Can we keep our deep friendships alive in the middle of this pandemic, in the middle of this uncertainty? Well, we're learning to join together in new ways, in different ways. Here we are together right now. I don't know if I can see all of you, but I see a bunch of you. So this is wonderful. This is wonderful. And Basho suggests we can in the middle of uncertainty. We can. And here is another poem about uncertainty by Basho. Now being seen off, now seeing off the outcome, autumn in Kiso. Now being seen off, now seeing off the outcome, autumn in Kiso. So he says goodbye to friends a lot, because he's a traveler. He's a traveling kind of monk, but more poet monk. He travels, does zazen. So he sees friends, they go, he goes. He's always seeing people off. Friendship. Throughout his whole life, he keeps it in the spite of uncertainty, right in the midst of uncertainty. Mutual give and take between us. Mutual give and take. Not just me talking to you. Give and take. Give and take. That's what friendship is. Heart connection. So once I went with Katagiri Roshi, who was the founder of the Zen Center, to at the airport to see off a friend who'd come from Japan. And Katagiri waved and waved until the friend was out of sight. He waved and waved. And later his wife told me, Tamoy, I said to Tamoy that he had done that. And she said, oh, we do that. We do that. She said, I do that too. This is, I guess, something the Japanese do. Wave and wave because of the heart connection. And you don't know if you'll see them again. You don't know. And yet you treasure autumn and kiso. That's the outcome. Everything is falling away. There's only autumn and kiso. But there it is, the beauty of the leaves, the trees changing, everything departing, uncertainty gives us a chance to relate in a new way. So that's the second gate. With our longing, the first gate, in this time of uncertainty, the second gate, we can practice simplicity. I talked to the priests about this yesterday. We're lucky. We get to practice simplicity. As confusing as it is, we have to pare down. We have to be close to home. We can't do a lot of things. We can't go to the movies. I've been thinking about asking my daughter how I can do Netflix so I can listen to movies at home. But maybe I should just stay pared down with no movies at all and be in my monastery. We have a chance each to be in our own monastery. Monastery, moan, one with our experience, moan. And when we got locked, when we don't simplify, we get all scattered. We have a wonderful chance to simplify. Don't you guys think? I think so. A wonderful chance. So here's Pasho. The works of other schools of poetry are like colored painting. My disciples paint with black ink. That's his poetry. The works of other schools of poetry are like colored painting. My disciples paint with black ink. So yesterday, I washed the stairs to the basement with my wife. And that's because we got rid of our cleaning woman. And you know we got rid of our cleaning woman? The pandemic. She goes into how many houses? And she's Russian. She didn't even kind of get the whole deal. So we gave her 2 months of pay and very cordial with her and then got rid of her. And then yesterday we did the cleaning. Linda and I have not done cleaning since before she went to graduate school. She went to graduate school. I had a full-time job. I had two full-time jobs. We were both psychologists, our kids. So we had a cleaning person until yesterday. Boy, I looked at those stairs while I was cleaning. Wow, it was wonderful. I was a little concerned about hurting my back, but I didn't. I was careful with my back. Simplicity, right back to this, being here. William Blake, hold infinity in the palm of your hand. Isn't that cool? Great stillness right here. Great spaciousness right here. Right here. Nowhere else, just right here. Everywhere else, but right here. Simplicity. A couple more simplicity poems by Basho. Snowy morning, alone, still able to chew dried salmon. So he's older when he writes this poem. He's eating the commoner's food. He begs for most of his food. Actually, he begs for all of his food. It's a cold morning. It's very ordinary circumstances, ordinary objects. And yet, he can really appreciate just chewing with his old teeth that dried salmon. Wow. Simplicity. There's another one. Now he named himself Basho after the banana plants. The Basho, thrashing in wind, rain drips into an iron tub, a listening night. So he's talking again about the banana tree that's outside his door that he planted. Its leaves have been torn by a fierce typhoon. And then there's a huge sound with the typhoon. And then the plank of the rain against the washtub, near, precise, intimate, the tiny and the huge in each plink. The basho, thrashing in wind, raindrops into an iron tub, a listening night. A listening night. Now, during this pandemic, we have a time, don't we, to have more listening nights, to have more listening mornings, to have more listening afternoons, to sound, to sights, to textures. We have that opportunity. We have that opportunity. So already I have gone through these gates pretty rapidly. Longing. We start with longing. We wouldn't do this practice if we didn't have longing. And in the midst of it, we're uncertain. Are we making any progress? Are we wasting our time? Should we be doing this during the pandemic when everybody is falling apart and unsure? We're uncertain, but we stay with our uncertainty. We open up to it. We take care of it. And we simplify. We simplify. We simplify. And then we say yes. We say yes. So simplification, opening up to uncertainty, simplifying is good. It's all good. But then we need to say yes. We need to say yes to this kind of confused, upside down experience that we're having right now as we simplify. Say yes. Say yes. So, a writer named Kavafi in 1900 in Greece wrote, for some people that the day comes when they have to declare the great yes or the great no. It is clear at once who has the yes ready within him and is saying it. He goes from honor to honor, strong in his conviction. He who refuses does not repent. Asked again, he'd still say no, yet that no drags him down all his life. Our no's drag us down all our lives. Here's Rumi. Say yes quickly, says Rumi. Forget your life. Say God is great. Get up. Forget your life. Say God is great. Get up. So my teachers used to talk about when they lived at a Heiji monastery in Japan. How when they were greeted, when they were monks in training, which they were for the whole 2 years they were there, both of them, when they were walking down the hall and they saw one of the teachers, one of the senior monks, and everybody else was senior but them, the monk addressed them by name, the senior monk, and they immediately said, hi, yes, hi. Hi. They were asked to do something immediately. They said, hi, yes, hi. No hesitation. Yes, 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 yes. Can we do that before we think about it? Just be here with it and say yes to it, whatever it is. Is it possible? I think so. I think so. Forget your life. Say God is great. Get up. You think you know what time it is. It's time to pray. It's time to pray. Zazen is not different from prayer. It's just not petitionary. We don't use words. We do use words sometimes. It's time to pray. You've carved so many little figurines, too many. Don't knock on any random door like a beggar. Reach your long hands out to another door, beyond where you go on the street where everyone says, how are you? And no one says, how aren't you? Already is built in. No one says, how aren't you? Everybody says, how are you? Tomorrow you'll see what you've broken and torn tonight, thrashing in the dark. Inside you, there's an artist you don't know about. Inside you, there's an artist you don't know about. Your Buddha nature. Yes, yes, yes. Before you even call it your Buddha nature. Yes, yes, yes. Is what I say true? Says Rumi, finishes. Say yes quickly. You've known it from before the beginning of the universe. Is what I say true? Say yes quickly. You've known it from before the beginning of the universe. And a poem by Basha. For one who says, I am tired of children, there are no flowers. For one who says, I am tired of children, there are no flowers. So my daughter lives in Paris with my two grandsons and her husband. And my grandsons are off the wall grandsons. I mean, they're boy boys, as Aaron says. They bounce continually. And they live in a tiny apartment in Paris, half the size of one of the floors of our house, of a Minneapolis house. And they're on lockdown. Paris has been on lockdown for some time. They're in shelter in place. So a couple of days ago, the boys wanted to go out and play catch with their father. And their father said, you know, the police could fine us for $100 if we do that. The park is right next to them. And but they said, Dad, people are in the park. So he took them to the park, and I don't know anything about that, except that I talked to Erin on the phone, and she said, and I said, how are you doing? She said, well, first I thought it would be wonderful to have the boys home, but I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted. And she said, and it's only the third day. How long will it go on? Uncertainty. Uncertainty. But she didn't say I'm tired of them. She didn't say that. She said I'm exhausted. Sometimes we're exhausted. And can we love each other and ourselves in times of exhaustion? Just as much. Just as much. Can we do that? Is it possible? Dogen says, without bitterest cold that penetrates to the bone, how can plum blossoms send forth their fragrance all over the universe? So the first gate is longing, and there's uncertainty. Third is simplicity, and then we need to say yes. Because if we just do those things, they prepare us to. Oh, no, I'm unmuted. Did you miss what? I don't know when I got muted.
Sorry, Tim.
Am I okay now?
Did you hear me?
Okay. So did you get the Dogen quote? No, he didn't get the Dogen quote. Dogen, without bitterest cold that penetrates to the bone, how can plum blossoms send forth their fragrance all over the universe? So the first gate, longing. Second one, uncertainty. We're uncertain right in the middle of our longing. We long more, and the more uncertain it is, the more we long. But that longing, we can direct that longing to be here with our breathing, with our body, and our zazen, our big mind, especially when we simplify, as we simplify. And then as we say yes to whatever it is, just say yes. Before you analyze it. And then the fifth one is intimacy. So what is Zazen? What is Zen meditation? Is it a tool for exploring a single moment's precise perception and depths? Is it for that exploration to occur? I think so. If we see and hear for ourselves, all things speak with us and through us. It happens on its own. We can't force it just by doing this. So Basho says, to learn about the pine tree, go to the pine tree. To learn about the bamboo, go to the bamboo. Simple intimacy. Interesting. So Basho wandered all his life. He wasn't concerned about destination, but the quality of attention. That's Soto Zen. Not destination, but the quality of attention, of being here with each other, with the computer, with the uncertain, just being here. Not gaining mastery. We'd all like to gain mastery, but good luck to us. Good luck. Mastery always will elude us forever. My teacher gave me the name Thoroughgoing Zen, and he said, that name, you may not like that name, you may want attainment of Zen for your name, but Thoroughgoing Zen is better. Thoroughgoing, just being present with our hate, with our aches, with our pains, with our love, in our connectedness with all life. So Basho says, if we were to gain mastery over things, their lives would vanish under us without a trace. If we were to gain mastery over things, their lives would vanish under us without a trace. When we master, we miss. We miss the kinship. We miss the camaraderie of just being with this, which is so ordinary, so simple, so concrete, so unmystical. There's another one by Basho. The third one I'm going to do two for this gate. Two more for this gate. He does the intimacy gate a lot, a whole bunch. Growing old, eating seaweed, teeth hitting sand. Growing old, eating seaweed, teeth hitting sand. Intimacy with each bite. He can still chew. He can still eat. And be there with it. Simple objects of daily living. Here he writes, coldness, deep-rooted leeks washed white. So we can imagine him pulling leeks out of frozen soil, washing them in icy streams, his hands being cold, leeks being really white. You know how white leeks are? Entering the hands and body in the cold. Coldness, deep-rooted leaks, washed white. Intimacy. Which brings me to the last gate, the sixth gate. So we've started with longing. And this is not linear. Longing is always there for human beings. And if we have the longing for deep quietness, for deep love, then we want to practice something spiritual. We want to do that. We long for that. And we do it, even in the midst of uncertainty. And when we do a spiritual practice, we never know if we're making progress. We don't know. We make a little progress and we make a huge regress. We make a little more progress and we make another lateral. We don't know if it's a regress or a progress. But that's okay. That's uncertainty. Nothing is certain. That's Buddha's first teaching, the transiency, right? We think we know transiency, but we don't know transiency till something like has been happening to us the last couple of weeks happens. Then we really know transiency. Ah, do we want transiency? Maybe we better find another different religion. You know what I mean? It's the sixth gate, cracking open. So longing, uncertainty, simplify. That's what Thoreau said. He said that's his main thing that he wanted to teach. He wanted to pass on to his disciples. Simplify. Say yes. Thoreau didn't do a great job of saying yes. He was pretty cranky. But he did a great job of simplifying. And sometimes he said yes. Practicing intimacy leads to cracking open. Even if we're uncertain, if we simplify and do it, we crack open. So Basho names himself Basho, which means banana plant. He doesn't use the name his teacher gave us. He practiced in a monastery in his early 30s and then left in his mid-30s. And I'm sure his teacher gave him a name, but he takes the name banana plant. Basho, and he plants a banana plant right next to his hut. And he has some affinity with a banana plant because he himself is lonely and defenseless. The banana plant seems to be. They're frail. Their leaves in the wind can easily get dismantled by hard wind. And yet they're resilient. They can bend. They don't break very easily. It just bent. And when the leaves are really disturbed by the wind, then the stem opens. It cracks open, and water pours out from its roots. I've seen this happen in the Caribbean. Water pours out. Where did that water come from? It just pours out from a deep place, a deep reservoir inside. At the bottom? Is there a bottom? Where does it come from? It just pours out. So that's why he named himself Basho. I think that's why he named himself Basho. I think, based on what I've read. I've also read Robert Aiken. Jane Hirschfield and Robert Aiken are the two best Basho commentators. And then, of course, I've read Basho's own material. Here's Li Po, 500 years earlier in China, doing Zazen on Qingting Mountain. The birds have vanished down the sky. Now the last cloud drains away. We sit together, the mountain and me, until only the mountain remains. Li Po. Cracking open. Basho's poem, on this road walks no one this autumn eve. On this road walks no one this autumn eve. Beyond the personal self, beyond little Tim or little Anne or little Ted, beyond sad and bereft. We don't kick out sad and bereft. We just move beyond it by being with it, with our open-heartedness. It moves beyond, alone and rooted in the deep calmness in this fall. On this road walks no one this autumn eve. Are we in fall or spring right now, you guys? We think maybe it's spring, but it feels like fall. We're going inside. We're not out frolicking. We're cutting down. It seems like we're entering winter. Is it fall or spring? Can we be with it? Whatever it is, this fall, spring, it seems like a fall, spring to me. So Basho traveled for months at a time. He kept his head shaved and monk's robes, even though he wasn't a monk. Very interesting. And look at me, no head shaved, and I left my Rock Stewart Zen Center. Right, wherever we are, we can practice. We can practice wherever we are, wherever we're. Travel for months at a time. He said to his students, he had many students, most of them were poets, but he encouraged them all to practice Zazen. He told them that if they didn't practice Zazen, they probably couldn't do his kind of poetry, which later became haiku. They probably couldn't do it. And he said to his students, the problem with most poems is that they are subjective or objective. You know, most poems are either subjective or objective. And one of his more assertive students piped up and said, don't you mean too subjective or objective? And he said, no, I mean subject. They are subjective or objective. So he's pointing to beyond self and other. Right here, cracking open. That's what he's pointing to. That's what I'm trying to point to. So here's another poem about cracking open from Basho. Cutting a tree, seeing the sawed trunk it grew from, tonight's moon. Cutting a tree, seeing the sawed trunk it grew from, tonight's moon. So there he is, cutting a tree. It's obviously nighttime. He's pruning away the dead wood. His mind becomes very quiet. And suddenly, he sees the moon as the dead wood disappears. He cracks open to this great stillness, this great spaciousness, this great feeling of connectedness and joy that's right here in intimacy, right here in intimacy. The moon that's right under our eyes, but we miss it because we've got all that dead wood that we need to, as we simplify, just cut it away. And don't cut it away with a chainsaw. That's not good. Just cut it away with a nice bow saw. Gentle bow saw. You won't, if you said cut it away with a chainsaw, you'll miss them. I lived in northern Minnesota. For 2 years, we heated our house just by cutting wood. Just by cutting wood. So we start by longing for something deeper. You can say we start, but right now we start for longing something deeper. And we experience uncertainty. It makes it really hard for us to practice because we're so confused. We're so upset, but we simplify. We simplify. We simplify. And we say yes to whatever it is. We just say yes. We practice intimacy and then it happens. We don't do it, but we crack open as bodhisattvas. As my teacher said, there are no enlightened people, only enlightened activity. So I'm going to close with a poem by Gary Snyder, who was also a Basho devotee. And he uses the word bosatsu in this poem, bosatsu meaning bodhisattva in Japanese. You be bosatsu. I'll be the taxi driver driving you home. You be bosatsu. I'll be the taxi driver driving you home. And that's how I want to end this morning. And